Okay, good morning, gentlemen. So, we're trying to figure out half and half. That's what I labeled the shiur yesterday, half and half. We talked about half testimony on one and the half testimony on the other, adding the two together, adding different. In other words, you have normally the one who delivers the divorce is supposed to be able to answer the questions. Were you there? Was it written properly? Do you know the witnesses? And the case was, what if he doesn't know everything, but we bring other witnesses? Can you add the two? That's really the whole discussion that we're in the middle of, is adding different testimonies together. The two halves equal a whole. And so once we opened the discussion about adding different things, they looked at other areas of halacha where they added different things. So one area was they were talking about a mechitza, where you have a wall where you can have part half dirt and half mechitza, half wall separation. And then we got into, can you wash two halves to your hands? So we were trying to figure out exactly what the question was. If we meant, can you wash with one thing of water both hands at once? Apparently there is a method to do that, you know, to wash both, you know, with the same. And if we meant, like, wash one hand in the mikvah and one hand with, you know, so we learned that's okay. So then we said, well, how about washing half your hand? You know, well, that's not a good idea. That's, you know, two fingers or half. But then we wanted to know, maybe you washed half, dried it, and then washed the other half. And that was the question, could you wash such a way or not? So that's where we are on, we're at 15b. At the very bottom, Tesvav Amid Beis. Let's go from, well, we could start from the beginning. Boy, Ilfa. Ilfa asked the question. It's about 10 lines up. Yadayim Torah Slechatzayin. Can hands be purified in half? Oh, Ein Torah Slechatzayin. Can you not purify hands? Again, hands that need to be washed to eat impurity. Can you do it in half? So, hey, Kidami, what's the case? If can you mean, can you wash two hands with one cup? But Tadan, Mervius, no to the Adayim. You can wash even for two hands. That can't be the question. Hello, what's the question? The Kamashi Chad Yada, maybe you wash different hands separately. But Tanan, we learned that no to Yad Achas Benatila. If you wash one hand with the cup, with the taking of the water, and one hand b'shtifa, and the other hand by putting in the mikvah taharas. That can't be the question either. What is the question? Four lines from the Banu Kamashi, palga palga. Maybe you're washing half and then drying, and then washing the other half. Palga didei va'amar derevyana yadayim ein taharas lechatzoyin. It doesn't work that way. You can't wash half and then dry it. So the Mora said, lo sricha. This could come up if you don't have very limited water, or you're taking water out of, let's say, like a one of those big containers, and you think it's full of water.
What?
A kiur. A kiur, right? What do they call it? Beth Jacob has them, those big
urn.
Like a big urn. So you take the water, and you wash, and you run out. So you washed half, and then they go bring more. But by the time they bring more, your hand is almost dry. So this is the interesting thing. As long as the hand is still wet, you can then, sometimes you miss. Like, I don't know, you're not paying attention. You wash half your hand, and then you wash the other half. As long as this is still wet, so then it's considered not washing in halves, but you wash the whole thing. As long as it's still wet. So that's really our question here. Now, again, if you washed half your hand, and then dried it, and then washed the other, sometimes you get it with the first thing of water, and you miss, and then you get it with the second. But the whole hand ends up being washed at the same time. But what if you washed it and dried it? We said that's no good. But what if you washed it, and by the time you got the water, the rest of the hand was almost drip dry? So, de'ika mashka tofeach, the half of the hand that was washed earlier is still wet. So then the question is, his question was that good? So the Gemara says, so what if it's still wet? I mean, you finished washing already. How can you add the second part to the first part? And now we just get into the laws of purity as far as transfer. As we turn the top of the way, if something is still wet it's not considered attached, whether for impurity or purity. In other words, the something that's just moist, and the other part is this hand was washed earlier, that shouldn't be considered attached. So Lemora explains, no, de'ika tofeach latfiach, it's not just moist. It's moist enough that if it touches something else, it'll make it wet. So, in other words, you wash half the hand, and it took you a few minutes to get some more water, and the part of the hand you washed was almost dry, but if you were to touch it, it would still be wet. Now, by the way, if you haven't dried your hands to the point that after you wash, you're supposed to dry your hands, and if they're still wet, you could, in theory, still contaminate them. In other words, after you dry them, they're clean. But if you didn't dry them and they were still wet, and let's say you touched somebody who hadn't washed their hands or something, you would have to wash again. But if you washed your hands and then dried them and then you touched somebody's hand, you wouldn't lose the fact that you washed. But over here, our question is, what's considered still wet? The fact that if somebody touches your hand, the dampness will come off. So the Mora answered that that's considered still wet. The Mora said, but that's obvious. That tanina tipuach latviyah kibbut. So the Mora says, dilma le'inyan mikvos. Maybe what we mean is regarding a mikvah. And we go like Rabbi Huda. It's not an interesting halacha. Now, you never know where we're going to go in the Gemara. You have to like widen your mind to be open to learning anything when you open a page, no matter where you're at. So now we'll get to the laws of mikvah. Mikvah needs to have a minimum amount of water. That amount of water is called 40 saw. That's the amount of water that the average person would need to dunk in, meaning that if you didn't have that amount of water, in theory, you wouldn't fit. But even if you're very small, you need that. That's the minimum requirement, the mem saw. So what about if you measure the water in the mikvah, and that's exactly what they had? Sheesh bo boim sa mikuvenis. Anybody know what the mikvah's doing over here? Are they waiting for rain or they, I don't know, they haven't heard. But let's say you measured the mikvah. They're probably measuring right now, waiting. What if they have exactly 40 and they just need a little more, then we'll be able to try out the new mikvah. I haven't heard anything, but...
Remember, we had to do that for the woman's mikvah when that was made.
To wait for the rain, you mean, exactly.
Yeah, a long time. It was a real long time.
And somehow you get just at 40, you want to get more than 40. But what happens if you have exactly 40? And two people go in the dunk. Now, the problem is, after the first guy comes out, he takes the water with him. It comes out in his hair, in his armpits. And so after, if one person dunks and leaves the mikvah, there won't be 40 saw of water in that mikvah anymore. So the next guy that goes in can't purify himself. Together. So if they go in at the same time, they're both kosher, they're both pure. B'zeh or zeh, what happens if one went in and then left, and then the next one? Harishan tar vasheni tummy. The second guy is not is just as impure as he started because there wasn't enough water left. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Im hayu raglav shorisho nogas b'mayim." If the first guy still has his foot in the water, afasheni tar, then the second guy is still tahar, because it's true some of the water is in this guy's hair and his beard, but he's still touching the water, so it's electricity. The water is all connected. So as long as the 40 saw is still connected, even if it's connected to his beard, he's got one toe in the water. So the other guy shouts to him, "Don't leak, take your toe out," and then he could go in, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Good morning, Maya. So
you can measure the water when you like one saw, two saw, three saw.
Right.
But when it's already in the mikvah already, there's no like level. This is level of the 40 saw. How they know when it's already in a container in a kli in the body of mikvah, that's still exactly 40 saw. They said plus minus like ounce, plus minus, you know, like gallon.
That's good. Anybody know how they measured?
I don't know, but I mean the Gemara over there in the sixth line says, you know, arba'im sa'm chuvanos.
Exactly.
They were
right.
However it is, they were able to say it's exactly 40 saw. That's what the Gemara is. How it is, it doesn't say, but the Gemara is saying it was. Exactly,
yeah, I'm not sure how they knew, but they knew. They somehow had a way of measuring. It could be there was a line, maybe, like, you know, there was, you know, you had like a measuring cup or the.
Okay. This is not the point. This is
they knew that it was exactly.
Well, how do we know? In other words, we have a mikveh, and we need to make sure. How do we?
There's a line there.
Oh, is there a line?
But it probably exceeds. They're not cutting it close like that.
Right. Yeah, they're gonna have some swap in there.
Yeah, if you estimate above. But either way, so over here we're saying that if the second man who's taking some of the water out is still touching, so all the water is still considered connected, because this is a halacha that water, as long as it's still attached, so to speak, it's still good. So here also that if a person washed his hand, and there was less water, it would, and the second hand was in. Basically, as long as it's still touching the water, so if he washed half his hand, and then the second part of the water was touching the first half, that would be considered whole. That water, when it's touching water, is even though it comes at different times, is still considered connected. Okay. Omer of Yirmiyah. Another question. Hare Omer haba rosho v'ruba maim shuvim. Vitar, let's say if a person is went to the mikveh and then he washed in a shower. So we have that, you know, the old mikveh, we had that problem that you, after you went to the mikveh, you were dirtier than when you started, especially after many people dunked in there, and so you wanted to take a shower. So there's a concept that you shouldn't take a shower immediately, because they were afraid over time people would think a mikveh was just a shower. Most conservative Jews think that a mikveh is just going to the bath. You know, they got it confused. That's what really happened, is that they knew Torah speaks of washing and purity. So they thought, okay, today we have plumbing, so we don't need it. And they threw out a whole body of, you could argue, what was the point where we lost, you know, millions of Jews to observance? But the observance of mikveh laws, everybody's mind was, well, mikveh was to clean, and now we have water, so they just threw it all away. But they didn't know that there's a difference between living water, which is mikveh water that a human came in contact with. That's what we call maim she'uvim, water that's been drawn. It's a famous lesson that people mess things up. It's humans. God's world's perfect. It's us humans that are imperfect. And so when we purify ourselves, we don't use maim shuvim, water that's been, came through man, that was drawn, where a human picked it up, and no, that's not how we purify. We go back to God. That's the, but what if a person were purify himself and were to immediately take a shower? So then he would lose that impurity. So you have this guy that was pure, but rosho v'ruba b'mayim shuvim, and then he immediately takes the shower. By the time most of us get home, you could probably take a shower after a mikveh, and that's, I think, what most people do if it bothers them or whatever. The question is exactly how, you know, can, you know, they, hopefully the new mikveh you'll feel clean. I don't know what they're going to do, but in the ideal mikveh, they have a system that it doesn't get grimy, or doesn't get... the old mikveh was never made for hundreds of men. It was made originally for women, and a small amount of them, and the water stayed pretty clean. But, you know, the way, you know, where you had dozens and dozens of men going in, it didn't stay as clean as you would have liked. And the original mikvehs were natural bodies of water. So those natural bodies of water, they stayed pretty clean. But so that was just a challenge that, you know, we had. And thank God, hopefully it's better. But it was fine before you became pure, but you had to ignore the fact that you might have to want to take a shower when you get a chance. Maybe not. Maybe there was a miracle and it wasn't so bad. I don't know. It was more. But over here, if you did take a shower, or that's mayim shuvim, water that was drawn, or v'tor shenofla rosh v'ruba shlosha logim mayim shuvim. What happens if somebody dumped a bucket of water over your head? Either you went in a bathtub, or they dumped the water on your head. Tameh. Then it's you're impure, because you're not using the natural water. So boy, Rav Yirmiyah, he had the following question. What if you half went in a tub and half fell on your head? Chetzia bebia v'chetzia b'nefila. You were not, it's only if you went fully in the tub that you would have to go to the mikveh again. So you went half in the bathtub. You just dipped your feet in. But then somebody else surprised you and turned the shower on or dumped some water on your head. And now you're... So it would half and half make you tummy. Take it. We'll have to ask Eliyahu HaNavi that one. That's, you can't figure that out. Omer et Papa. Hari Omru Bal Keri Kola. There's a halacha that one way to purify yourself is a mikvah. And in the ancient times, the most common mikvah was to go jump in a lake, was to go in a natural body of water. If you lived in different parts of the world, it would be very cold most of the year to jump in the water. And if a person was sick, it's not advisable to jump in cold water, to go in a very cold, you know, the cold months of the year to go in the water. And if you're just getting over a cold, it wouldn't be so advisable to go in cold water. And so what do you do? So there is another method of purifying other than mikvah. And by the way, that's today what a lot of people, at least men, rely on, which is the pouring of the water over one's head. Many opinions say that a shower also accomplishes a certain purity for men. And men have a seminal emission and they pour water over their head, the Tishah Kavan, that purifies themselves. And they allowed that specifically for a person who was sick. I think that's what the Chevra Kadishas do as well when they purify the body. They don't, I don't think they have a mikvah. Again, I've never been to a Chevra Kadisha, but they pour the water. So, Bal Keri Cholish, and also Tishah Kav and Mayim Tahar. The rule is that if you put the 9 kav of water on top of the, pour it on the body or on the person, he's Tahar. Boy, Repapa, Chetz Mitvila. What if he doesn't want to go all the way in the water? He gets his head wet. What if he dips his he dips his feet in, and then they pour on his head the other half? Would that work for purity? We'll have to ask Eliyahu HaNavi also. Especially when it comes to these laws of purity, if two things add together, we really don't know. In other words, there's one way to purify yourself in mikvah, and there's another way with water poured on your head. To do half and half, we just don't know if it adds together, if it goes together the same way. So, those last two questions, whether you can add together, we'll have to ask Eliyahu HaNavi, and let's get back to Gittin. Okay. Echad Omar b'fanaydecht of one witness said it was written in front of me. And he asked him about, how about the signatures? I have no idea. So then they get another witness for the signatures. So Omar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Omar Rav Yochanan. Now we're going to begin to explain the Mishnah. We went through it pretty fast because the Gemara was going to get to all the cases. Basically, the original, usually we require two witnesses, but because we didn't want to make it difficult for this woman to remarry, we said one witness will do it all. As long as that witness can testify, he was there for the whole time, for the writing and the signing, and that it was written Lishma, and that he knows he saw the witnesses sign it. But our case was this witness somehow wasn't there for the whole thing. Can we split it? Can you add two witnesses together? That's really how we got into the discussions about adding two different things together. And so we saw that half and half don't always make a whole. So we said that the two halves, normally, basically there's two ways to do it. Either you get regular testimony from two kosher witnesses, or you get one witness that sees the whole thing. We didn't know how to do it where you have half of one witness. He witnessed half, and then we got for the other half. Because it's either you're using the mechanism of the way the rabbis instituted where one witness sees the whole thing, or you bring the regular two. But to split it half and half, we didn't like that. So that rule where you split it half and half, that doesn't work if the other guy was not somebody who was there the whole time. In other words, the witness who should have seen everything didn't. But what if he comes together with another witness? It was like there was a tag team. The two are part of a team. So if the two are part of a team, then it's good. Avoget yotzim mitaksidei shneihem. If they both come together, then it's kosher. Now, how do they both tag team? And how does it work they come together? So Rashi over here learns, mitaksidei shneihem. Last Rashi on the page, Shneim Adukimbo. They're both holding on for dear life. They come to court, each one's holding half the document. Tosus says, I don't think so. Let's see Tosus. Bottom top, guess it to him. Masha Pir Shakun Shneim Adukimbo. Rashi says that they got to come, and each one is going like this. Here's the get. So Tosus says, Lav Dafka. Nah, she ain't so shame mamish shnei madukim for oxim beget. He says you don't. I can't imagine that they got to walk into court and they got to like carry it together this document. He says no. Elu sheshneim omrim shabal osu shneim shluchim alka. They both said that the husband asked the two of us to be involved. For omer lahem shneichem holkim get liishti. He said to both of them. I'm on the Tosfos in the bottom. Deliver this to his wife. Venasnu echad b'mayim chaveru. And the two of them were partners all along. It's interesting. Is it a machlokas or not? It sounds in a certain way. Rashi said they got to be holding it. And Tosfos says, not exactly. But I'm not sure if Tosfos is arguing or you can say that's what Rashi means.
I wonder if they're saying, you know, it's one thing to be both designated as shliach to deliver the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Baal telling one that he's the shliach for delivering and the other one's the shliach for the authenticity of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's different, isn't it?
It is different. See, if one comes and he's lacking information, so automatically we have a problem. So he says, no, I can find someone else who can testify, but the other guy is not authorized. But if two come together, even if one doesn't see the whole thing, but they were both authorized. So our question is, what does it mean they both come together? So Tosfos learns they both were appointed.
Right.
They were both asked to deliver it. Whereas Rashi learns that they both got to be holding on at the same time. So the question was, is Tosfos arguing on Rashi or explaining Rashi?
Right. I see.
So Tosfos didn't say, sometimes Tosfos says, I don't agree. But here he says, that which Rashi says, they're both holding it, lav dafka. So I'm not sure if he's saying Rashi doesn't mean that, or I disagree and say it doesn't have to be specifically that way. And my question was, so says arguing Rashi or explaining Rashi?
It is. Normally Rashi's going to make more sense, seems like, just the logistic side of it. That's just my little thing.
Right. Logistically, they both came. They're both holding it. You know. Okay. Great. They both are carrying it together. We know they're both buddies, right? So Tosfos says that doesn't mean so much that they're physically holding. It means that they were told by the husband. So I'm just saying, was Tosfos arguing on Rashi or explaining Rashi? I'm not totally sure.
How the Kabbalistically speaking, Tosfos can argue Rashi. Tosfos can only explain Rashi. Rashi was, I think, his grandfather. Something.
That's correct, right.
So how he can go and argue with his grandfather? He can explain his grandfather, clarify what he's saying. He cannot go, like, we have a law, we cannot go backwards on a tradition.
If it's a different era, you can't go back. But within the same, so Rashi and his grandchildren were all what's called Bali Tosfos. They were all within that same 200 years. So
Rashi
they
is included in them in a group together with
yes. Him. Yeah, so he could argue with his grandson. The story goes, I think it's apocryphal, that Rashi Ravina Tam was sitting on his grandfather's knee and he pulled the tefillin off. You know, they said he's going to one day argue on his grandfather's tefillin. You know, like his Zaidi. He was tugging on it. You know, or whatever. You know, no Zaidi like the, but they were all they. It's difficult to question when you start a new era. That's always been, sometimes it's been clear, sometimes, but in theory, he could argue, or the question was, does it fit in the words? Is Rashi, could you say Rashi, even though Rashi said they were holding it, as Michael is saying, that's just a practical way of saying they came together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway, I'm just throwing that out there, an interesting toast. Back to the Gemara. But get Yosmine Shneyam Kosher, then it would be good. Alma, what do you see? Shnayim shev you get medina sayom. If you have two people that come from across the sea, ein srikin shiomra b'fneinu nechtam b'fneinu, do they both have to make the declaration or not? It actually said, if usually you have only one, and the chiddush was you don't need to, but if they both come, do they both got to be able to make the declaration? So he, and the Mora now is saying, you see from here that you don't need both of them to make the, because we didn't say that. So now we're going to try to make inferences. We've thrown out kind of a question here. We don't like when the first witness doesn't know what everything he's supposed to. And so then we want to go to the other system of two witnesses the whole time. And so maybe it's not kosher. But then we said if the witnesses came together, So you, if the what one doesn't know, the other one knows. Maybe it's good. But then we said, did they both have to make the declaration? We didn't say that. So Amar Le'Abaye, Elimiata Sefer. Let's look at the second part. Shnayim Omer if Neinu Nechtav. If they both said in front of us, it was written. But the one, both of them say we were there for the writing. Ve'echad Omer, and one of them says Befanai Nechtav. I saw not only the writing; I stayed the whole time. I was there for the signing. Puzzle. In that case, the first view is it's no good, because the testimony that we have is incomplete. They both came as a team, and half the team was asleep, was not there. Rabbi Yehuda Maksha, Rabbi Yehuda says it's good. So Taima de ain't get yotamida chashneim. The problem is that they both weren't a team. Ha get yotamida chashneim. If they were a team, Maksha Rabbanan. They would have said, this is a new thing now, that we're saying that when they come as a team, they can, what one doesn't know, the other one can fill in. V'ki ain't get yosemid ha'shneim b'may pligi. And if the get didn't come from both of them, what would be the argument? Mar sever gazrinin. It's like a rabbinic decree. Dilma asa l'chlufe b'kiyim sh'taris d'yalma. Maybe, see, when two witnesses come, we think it's regular testimony. And since regular testimony, we don't have two on the whole thing. Beit Echad, normally one witness would be no good. And if we say one witness is good over here, we'll come to think in other cases it's good. And so therefore, we can't accept it here, even though in theory one should be enough. See, if there's only one person, somebody would say, what kind of testimony is this? The answer is, it's not regular testimony. It's divorce testimony. Only one person works. But when you see two witnesses, so you're thinking this is just like every single case in front of the docket. You have to have two witnesses. And one of the witnesses is wobbly. One of the witnesses gets up there. Were you there for the signing? So if you're in the peanut gallery, people, by the way, watched in Beis Din, and that's how you learned halacha, is that you had the students watching at actual cases. And so they're in front and they're seeing the two witnesses came and one of the witnesses was wobbly. So now, even though technically you don't need two witnesses because it's divorce law, but nobody really noticed what the case was. They just noticed that we're accepting one, and they might come to accept one. So that's the reason that it's not good. It's not because there's an intrinsic problem here. If you came with one witness, we have no problem. We understand that one witness works for divorce. You came with two, and it looked like regular kiyum shtaros. We can't have somebody wobbly if you come with two. Maybe Dilma Asla Klufi became Shtaris Diyama, Beit Echad, with one witness. Umar Savar Lo Gazrina, no, there's no such rabbinic decree. Very often we have these questions. Was there a rabbinic decree or not? They weren't always in writing. They didn't have much writing in those days. There were decrees in some areas. Sometimes they were accepted, sometimes they weren't. And so it's relatively common that we'll have a debate. Would they have made that invalid or not? Lishna Akrina, some people say, Omer Le Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. Lishna Akrina is going to sound similar, but there'll be certain nuances that are different. Omer Rav Yochanan, Afilu get Yotz Mitakos Dei Shneim Pasul. Even if it comes from both, it's no good. Amla Kasavra, you see from here, Shneim Shevi get Midiyas Ayom. It's only good if they both can make the declaration. Shrika Sheomer, Faneinu Nektam, Befneinu Nektam. This is different. Before we were saying that the two don't need to make the declaration. The declaration was only for one. It's almost like they get up in court and declare together. But this view says you do. Amar Le Abaye, but Abaye said, if that's true, look at the next case. L'tani shnayim v'neinu nechtav, echan omer v'nei nechtam, pasul Rav Yehuda Maksher. Afilu get yotz midach ha'shneim. Even if it comes through both of them, pasli rabbanan, the rabbanan would say it's no good. Amar Le in, yes. But my kamifagi, what's the reason? So Mar Savar Lefish Ein Bekiyin Lishma. So this goes back to the original reason for the witnesses. We're worried that maybe it wasn't written. They didn't realize that you couldn't recycle an old document. Mar Savar Lefish Ein Imitzum Lekaimo. Maybe you won't. I have witnesses to confirm the signatures for it was from out of the country. So Lema De Rava Rabba Tanoihi. Is that the argument? That's the original. We started, almost 2 weeks ago with Rabba and Rabba about the issue of what's the basic concept of the testimony. So Gemara said, no, Rava, each one could learn this. It's not necessarily that was the earlier argument. Rava mataritz kalishna kama, Rava omer, Rava will learn like the first way we said it, that the main thing is the lishma. I'm sorry, Rava will learn the main thing is the signatures. Rava omer la kuliyama bein lishma, everybody agrees with me that you need lishma. V'hachamayiskinin. Our case is la'achar shelamdu. Once it became everybody knew it, we were afraid to discontinue the declaration rules. With the rabbis, they were concerned that people would use a get that was recycled and the woman would think she's divorced and she's really not. Now, you can't imagine this. Somebody who's a God-fearing person would end up committing adultery and having illegitimate kids just because they used a document that was they didn't know that you can't recycle, that it had to be written l'shma. So the rabbis went 100% with this decree that they only accept divorces where they make the declaration. And after many generations, again, I've been at a few in the old days. They used to do them down here in Beth Jacob. They had a traveling rabbi that would write divorces. And if you were somewhere in the building and they needed witnesses, they would find you. And sometimes I was in the building. The kashrus office was there. And so that's very clear if you're ever at a divorce ceremony about Lishma. They make that. It's like, now, if you know anything about a divorce, if you've ever been there, you hear that 100 times. The Lishma, the man has to command the scribe to write it for the woman, for her sake, for his sake. They go through, it's in the wording. It's like every scribe knows, even if they didn't, they missed that class, they're going to know it. So the question, though, is, once they made it so strong that everybody knows, b'fanai nechta, but maybe do we still have to keep it up, or are we afraid that we'll go back? And that's also an important rule, is to never make the same mistake twice. In other words, everybody makes a mistake. That's human. But to repeat the mistake, that's a problem. Like, you didn't learn from the mistake. So we fixed it. We fixed this problem of people recycling divorces. We figured out the perfect fix. So now that it's fixed, we're going to allow people to stop making the declaration. So maybe they'll forget that halacha. So that's the question. Do we still have to have this rabbinic decree just in case people will forget and it'll go back to the way it was before? Mar sever gazrina, we have to be afraid. Mar sever lo gazrina. Sometimes it's a little too fearful. V'lifnami Rabbi Yehuda Bereisha, let him argue in the first case, Omar lo, Omar ula cholakai Rabbi Yehuda. He says he does. Even though we didn't speak it out, the question was in the first case where you had the witness didn't know everything and he brought the two witnesses. Mesi Rav Osha Le'ula, he has a question. Rav Yehuda Makshir Bezuv, Ulo Bacheris. He says only in this case, my lav Lamute Acher. Isn't he coming to exclude Lamute Echer Omer Fanei Nechta? One witness says, I saw the writing. And a different witness says, I saw the ceiling. And maybe he would hold that's good. So Gemara said, no, lamute b'fanai nechta, only in front of the signing, avolo b'fanai nechta. It doesn't go both ways. Now, why would I think that? Silka dakta mina hoyo v'lo gozer Reb Yehuda, gzeiru shema yaksa dover l'kukula. Since Reb Yehuda, he felt that you could take two different single witnesses, and he wasn't afraid that it'll go back to the way it was in the old days, and maybe people will come to recycle. Doma asa klufa v'kiyam sh'taris d'alma. But he was afraid that you would come to think that you could confirm documents with one witness, Beit Echad, Nami Lo Gazer. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda wasn't worried about these rabbinic enactments. Rabbi Yehuda, either you have these worries or you don't. Meaning, over here, we're not worried about Lishma because everybody knows Lishma. And we're not worried about one witness because we're talking about divorce. One witness is fine. So maybe Rabbi Yehuda didn't worry about one rabbinic problem, didn't worry about the other. And the other view was, we've got two rabbinic problems. One is the rabbis instituted, you always have to say, b'fanai nechta, the whole thing. And the other is that if you do over here with one witness, and people might come to use other cases with one witness. So the question is, once we know Rabbi Yehuda argued on one rabbinic thing, he wasn't gozer, maybe he argued on the other, kamash malan, he agrees to one rabbinic thing and not to the other. Each rabbinic thing is unique. And that's we find this also. Sometimes they felt there was a need to put up a fence, and sometimes they didn't. And you can have a lot of fun trying to figure out why this case they decreed, you know, you should do this, and in other cases it wasn't binding. You know, what was the reason? Again, the challenge is they didn't always tell us the reasons. Okay. Itmar nami omru yudu eshnaim shevi get me din yisayom. When two people deliver a divorce and they make it, one doesn't know at all, both maklos, that has to be there in their maklokas. Rava bar Chana, now we get a story. We're always going to get a story because when we have different opinions, we need to know what they did. So Rava bar Chana, cholish. He got sick. Now, people got sick, they used to visit them because of Bikur Cholim, and also to learn from them, to get the secrets from them. So, all the Gabe Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi L'Shului Bei, they went to check in on him. They went to ask of him. So, once they go, what do you do when Jews get together? You learn Torah, you know. First you say, how are you feeling? And then you say, I got a question for you. So, Bo Minei, they asked him the following. Shnayim Shevi Get Midin Yisayom. Two people deliver a divorce from across the sea. Shrich and Shiyom of Neinu Nechto of Neinu Nechto. Do they both need to make the declaration? Oh, ain't Shrichen. The original words of the Mishnah were in singular. We didn't really talk about having two. So, and it's interesting, we started off getting with that. So that makes it seem like it's perfectly legit to not have both of them get up there, just have one. So the two need to say it or not? So Amar Le, ain't Shrichen. Nah, they don't need. My Ilo Yom Ifneinu Gersha, what's the reason? He said, when you got two people, if they had said, they don't have to declare they saw the get, if they had said that the divorce was delivered and this woman was divorced, we wouldn't ask any more questions. If two witnesses come and say, this lady, she's divorced, we accept that. So the fact that they can't both say, we saw it signed and we saw it, two witnesses is amazing. So, mi lo mehemna. So, wouldn't they be believed? So, that was what he said. Ad hachi asahu chavra. That's not the rest of the story. In the middle of the again, you have this elderly rabbi that's not feeling so well. It might be dying. And you have the two rabbis that came to check in on him. And they're having a discussion of the Gemara in Gittin. And it's nighttime, and there's a lamp there. So, right in the middle of the discussion, asa chavra shachol shraga mikameh. The Persian gangsters came in and grabbed the light of the study. You guys are studying. They grabbed the light on the top of today's page, tomorrow's page, 17A. And we're going to leave you here, so you'll have to come out tomorrow to find out what happened with the Persians grabbing the light. Apparently, there was a sect that felt they worshipped the fire. And so on a certain day, you weren't allowed to have the fire. And so if they saw smoke in a house, they would go. And so in the middle of these elderly rabbis studying, they came in the middle and they, we'll have to see what the rest of the story was.